Welcome to a new episode of LFC Talk at Hotel Tia. Today with the lovely Karen Gill. How are you today, Karen?
I'm fine, thank you. Busy weekend, and a fantastic weekend. Yes, recovering still.
Yeah, she's just had her first home match weekend at Hotel Tia. We have to hear all about this. And with us as well, we have the lovely David Fairclough. How are you doing with your zebra today in the background, David? Are you okay? Are you both okay?
All good, yeah. Obviously, enjoyed the weekend, like Karen said, but, you know, we've got something special to look forward to. Big week.
And, oh, it's a massive week, isn't it? Just James Pearce, the fourth to join us on this podcast this week. It's lovely, lovely, lovely to have you back, James. How are you?
Yeah, thanks for having me back. Yeah, oh, I'm good, thanks. Yeah, enjoying, after a long summer, enjoying the fact that proper football's back and, yeah, the fact that Liverpool are off to a flying start makes it all the more enjoyable.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I mean, we're on the top of the table together with Chelsea with two clean sheets and five goals already in the sack, just like completely identical to Chelsea. Was that the dream start you were waiting for, David?
Well, obviously, you want to get off to a good start. And to have begun with two clean sheets is a major plus, I think. I think good signs in that direction. But to get to, you know, reasonably handsome wins, certainly the Norwich one was a great result. Thought we might have done a little bit better on Saturday. Is that asking for too much? But I think the chances that we had, and perhaps Burnley rode their luck a little bit, could have been, you know, quite a good scoreline. But no complaints. I think all signs are very, very good. West Ham as well, I have to add, has joined Chelsea and on us on, you know, with two wins as well. So it's going to be an interesting season this season. I think West Ham building on what they did last year. So no surprise, perhaps, that Chelsea and Liverpool have got off to a good start. But I think one or two other teams are taking advantage as well of a healthy start.
But David, you went to Anfield when it was finally packed again for a league game. Can you try to describe the atmosphere, even though it was an early kickoff?
Yeah, I think despite the weather, I think people couldn't get to Anfield quick enough. It was a very rainy morning at Anfield, but you could just sense the excitement. I was there about 20 past nine on Saturday morning, and people were queuing to get in at half past nine when the gates opened. And you just knew that there was this feel-good factor, everybody very much glad to be back in the old routine. And once I got into the ground, I was doing one or two things for the club. It was quite apparent that so many people were so glad to see friends that they hadn't seen for quite a while. So the atmosphere was great in the lead up to the match. And then obviously once everybody was in situ and the teams came out, it was quite emotional, I think, with the You'll Never Walk Alone. It was a great rendition on Saturday.
And James, after the game, you could just tell so many of the players who signed last season, who hasn't experienced this before, they were quite blown away by being at the full Anfield, weren't they?
Yeah, they really were. I think, you know, it was crazy to think, wasn't it, that people like Jota and Thiago have been at the club a long time and, you know, haven't experienced that. And whenever you, you know, from all the interviews I've done with players when they've joined Liverpool over the years, usually, you know, one of the first things that comes up in conversation is them saying, you know, I just cannot wait to experience Anfield, you know, when it is packed to the rafters. You know, the atmosphere is something that attracts them to Liverpool in the first place. So the fact that they couldn't experience that for so long, you know, was undoubtedly, you know, we know that was a factor in the struggles that Liverpool went through last season. And I think, you know, the other side of that is you could tell from Saturday. You know, usually lunchtime kickoffs are quite subdued occasions, but that was anything but, because, you know, everyone just couldn't wait to be there and be a part of it. And, you know, the home form cost Liverpool dear last season. You know, you think probably 20 odd points, you know, pretty carelessly thrown away. And, you know, that there's no doubt that, you know, Anfield's going to be a very, very different place for visiting teams to come to this time around.
Yeah, Burnley definitely had a harder task this time than when they shock beat us in January, and that's for sure. But let's talk a little bit about Jota first, because he's been in great form and he's been delivering, hasn't he, the first two opening games. And he seems like a new trademark. He just scores early. Is that what we will expect of him all season? He just fires us all up and gets us started.
It's a funny one, Jota, I think. I think there's no doubt in his ability. Sometimes he doesn't start as if he's going to be on absolute, you know, sparkling form, but the opposition can never sort of discount him and think, you know, because right up to the goal, really, he hadn't played much part in it. And that has often been a factor. He just has this knack of coming alive. He is alive anyway, but when the real opportunity strikes, he's absolutely deadly. And his movement on Saturday was superb. I think the ball was in the net before me had actually finished his movement, because, you know, Jota's headed the ball, goes in the goal, and me is still sort of in motion as if he's going to head it. That's how quick Jota took them by surprise, his movement coming from behind me into that space in between two centre-backs. And that is a gift that Jota has. There's absolutely no doubt he's a great goal scorer. And like he said, it was almost starting his Liverpool career all over again, playing in front of a full Anfield and celebrating it with a goal the way that he did.
And he was assisted by what we just named our new Greek god, Tsimikas, who did live up to his fresh name from last week. James, can you tell us a little bit about how you found him? Because his work rate forward as well, I mean, he can really do shoot some long crosses and work so hard backwards as well. I think we have a new fabulous man to set up goals for us.
Yeah, he's certainly proven that he's an able deputy to Robertson. I still think Robertson comes back in for the Chelsea game next weekend. I think he's now fully fit, you know, been back in training since last Friday. But Tsimikas couldn't have done any more in the two games that he's been given. I think you know, it was interesting over the summer, because lots of people, because he hardly played last season, people questioned whether he would even be kept on this time around, whether Klopp would look to move him on. But, you know, Klopp was very clear from the start of pre-season that he still believed in him. He felt, you know, I think last season pretty much everything that could have gone wrong for Tsimikas did, really, with, you know, he got COVID, he got various injury problems, and he wasn't able to kind of ease that burden on Robertson, who, of course, started every single Premier League game. And you know, that's not sustainable with the demands of modern football. So Liverpool needed someone to take the pressure off Robertson a little bit. And I think it probably helped Tsimikas as well, the fact that he got thrown in, having played a lot of football in pre-season, because, you know, say Robertson had got injured in the middle of November, Tsimikas probably wouldn't have played for 3 months and then would have found himself thrown in. But as it was, with Robertson's ankle injury coming at the end of pre-season, Tsimikas had a number of games under his belt. He'd got that confidence. He'd stayed fit throughout the whole of pre-season. And you're right, he looks the part. I think now, finally, you know, a year on from signing him from Olympiakos, we're seeing why Liverpool decided he was very much in the kind of the Klopp, kind of the kind of fullback that the manager loves. I still think maybe there's improvements to be made to his game defensively. I think he's very good going forward. I think at times suspect defensively, which I think is probably why Robertson, you know, I don't think that's too big a decision for the manager ahead of the weekend. But yeah, you know, you could see that, you know, I think fans always love it, don't they, when they see a player who, you know, gives everything for the cause, and Tsimikas is certainly in that bracket.
And great set pieces. He had a couple of brilliant corners as well. Karen, you have just moved from Greece, where Tsimikas is from. What is the reception from his Liverpool play in your old home country?
Well, I mean, I've been reading a few newspapers, and the sports newspapers, I mean, his name is splashed all over the front pages of the sports newspapers, like the Greek Scouser, and Scouser written in Greek letters, which is quite funny. And that, you know, people, and trying to explain to people what a Scouser is, in the Greek newspapers. But obviously, because he played for Olympiakos, and Olympiakos is one of the top teams in the Greek league, you know, people are very excited to see how he does. They're very supportive of him. And there is kind of this link between Olympiakos and Liverpool, like sadly a tragic link when in 1981, Olympiakos had a tragedy in their stadium when 21 supporters, you know, lost their lives. And so you often see, like, if Liverpool supporters come over to the Olympiakos stadium, they will leave flowers and they will visit the stadium, and vice versa. When, you know, Greek supporters go over to Liverpool, they'll always go and place flowers on the Hillsborough Memorial. So there is this kind of this affinity in a sad way, in a tragic way, but they will feel, you know, they'll be rooting for him. Definitely, he has a lot of, Liverpool has such a great support in Greece as well. So everybody will be certainly rooting for Kostas.
And Karen, Tsimikas isn't the only one who's been thrown in the deep end with Robbo's injury. You were thrown in the deep end too, hosting your very first home match event at Hotel Tia this weekend. What was it like, and how was the fans, you know, after the game when they'd finally been back at their dear Anfield?
Well, as David, I was kind of around Anfield very early on Saturday morning, and it was just great to see people walking through the park, you know, with their shirts on, the colour, even though the rain is miserable and makes everything sort of grey. You know, the nice seeing the red shirts across the park, all the people, you know, so early in the morning, but there was a great kind of air of excitement. And, you know, obviously at Hotel Tia, we can hear, you know, we can hear the sound of the support is cheering, and we can hear them singing, you know, "You'll Never Walk Alone." So even though I didn't get to go to the match, it felt like I was part of the experience, because Anfield is such a sort of exciting place, isn't it, when there's a match on. I mean, there is an atmosphere, you feel like you can cut it with a knife. It's kind of electric, and you could see happy faces, and people were so glad to see each other again after so long. It was a really special day on Saturday. And of course we had Bruce as well, and he was so entertaining, all his stories, you know. It was great. It was a great debut for me as well.
You're already looking forward to the pre-match with dear David Fairclough on Saturday ahead of Chelsea then?
Absolutely, absolutely. I've been warmed up now. I'm ready to go. And obviously, David's such a nice guy, and he's so easy to talk to, and he speaks so well. So it'll be really great. It'll be a treat for everybody to hear him.
I don't know if I can live up to Bruce's reputation, kind of. don't worry about. But I know Bruce's character well enough. He is that type of character. So. Looking forward to that. Just going back, if I may, just to the Tsimikas. I mean, he's done so well. I mean, we kind of waxed lyrical about him last week after his performance at Norwich. I don't think he could have done much more. And you know, probably it will. You know, Robertson might well come back in on Saturday, but I wouldn't be as critical of, as James might, of his defensive qualities in comparison to Robertson. I think the challenge that he made on Goodmunson was testimony to how physically he can be and how alert he is. Not to be underestimated, Tsimikas. I think Robertson's got a challenge on his hands.
Talking about challenges, Hendo was finally back playing for Liverpool for the first time since February, believe it or not. It's been so long. And he was totally on fire as well. You know, what does he bring to the game, James, when Hendo in form is back in midfield?
I think he gives Liverpool control. He sets the tempo in games. I think just having him there, I think, improves players around him, because, you know, he's such a vocal presence as well, always organising and demanding more and more from his teammates. So, yeah, I think it was good timing, wasn't it? Because, you know, Klopp's options in midfield were depleted, with, of course, Fabinho on compassionate leave, having lost his father. Oxlade-Chamberlain was at the birth of his child, and James Milner had a calf problem. So, you know, he didn't have too many options, but, you know, the bonus was that he felt that Henderson was ready after you know, a short pre-season because of the Euros. Of course, he missed the win at Norwich. So that was, yeah, that was, you know, on a day packed full of positives for Liverpool, really. You know, Henderson getting those minutes under his belt was huge. And yeah, I thought the midfield, you know, it was, again, similar to Norwich. It was a very unfamiliar looking midfield that probably the three of them probably won't play much football together as a unit this season, but they worked well. I thought Naby Keita carried on where he left off in the win at Carrow Road. And, you know, young Harvey Elliott, I think, just continues to impress, doesn't he? It's, you know, he's still so young, and, you know, he's been expected to learn a new position this season in midfield, having predominantly played all of his youth football and the bit of senior football that he's played as a right winger. But I think, you know, he's really impressed the coaching staff with how he's taken on board what they've demanded from him. And yeah, I thought he looked quite nervous early on, Harvey Elliott, but once he settled, he just went from strength to strength. And yeah, he's a fearless young player. And, you know, I think we're starting to see now why Liverpool were so delighted to beat so many other top clubs to his signature when they got him from Fulham.
Because he got tackled pretty roughly quite a few times. It didn't bother him. He just went on with it. He seems like he's mentally really, really tough as well as a great player.
Yeah. And I think that was one of the big things for me from the game. Because I think some young players, when they get clattered like he did a few times early on, and clearly you could tell that, but that was part of Burnley's game plan, was to write, you know, this kid's never started a Premier League game before. Let's get into him, get in his face, try and unsettle him. And, you know, some young players faced with that kind of hostility would go missing. But what I liked about Harvey Elliott was he just kept on demanding the ball. He never hid. And I think that probably showed the real value in Liverpool using the loan system last season. I mean, he went to Blackburn. He played 41 league games for them. And the Championship is a really tough league. And I spent a bit of time with Harvey last week through a link up between The Athletic and BT Sport. And he was talking about the physicality of men's football just doesn't really worry him, because he said he, as a kid, when he was 13, he was playing in the under 18s. And when he was 15, he was training with the first team at Fulham. So he's almost had to get used to that, you know, being having to play against players who are so much bigger and stronger and more physical. But, you know, that's where his football brain comes in terms of trying to make sure you're one or two steps ahead.
And another one that really impressed me was Trent, because he disappeared a little bit without the fans as well, I found, last season. His crosses weren't as accurate. He didn't assist that many goals as he normally does, but we're getting so spoilt with. Do you think the fans was the major factor for Trent playing so well on Saturday, David?
I think the fans help most players. I think some players are happy playing in front of fewer people. And I think I saw things in people's game play last year where they wouldn't have played in quite the way had there been a full Anfield. Certainly it benefited the opposition coming to Anfield and not playing with as much pressure and nerves around the place. But equally, some players do thrive. It's like being on the big stage. I mean, that's what you aim to do, to get to the big stage, to play in front of big crowds. And the best players thrive on it. And I think certainly we have got a lot of players who do thrive on the atmosphere and the feedback from the fans. And I would agree. I thought Trent Alexander-Arnold had probably at least half the season, he really wasn't on his game. He came into it more at the back end of the season last year. But I think he is inspired. He is one who clearly is inspired by the presence of the fans. And the thing on the Harvey Elliott thing, I thought he did come in for some heavy-handed challenges, particularly early on. I would agree that did seem to be a tactic of Burnley. The fact that it happened right in front of the box, though, I think helped. I think had he been on the other side of the field when that happened, that's when sometimes you could, you know, be drawn into your shell a little bit. I think the fact that he was playing right in front of the Liverpool bench, I think assisted him in that. I think you know, it's one or two of them things mightn't be been obvious, but it is one of those things. I remember in the old days, it was much better to be playing in front of the likes of Ronnie Moran and Joe Fagan and stuff than being out on your own on the other side. So the crowd helped, and certainly he warmed to the game as well. And a little bit of a nice combination, you know, built up between Alexander Arnold and Harvey Ellis as the game progressed. You know, we saw that clearly with the second goal.
Oh, the second goal was just magic. It was like a beautiful team effort. It was just bang, 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 bang in. And that turned Romanet at the end to just finish it off. It was just what we Liverpool fans have been spoilt with a couple of seasons ago. It was just seeing that dangerous, quick team attack back. And it just really warmed my heart, I have to say. Also, it was lovely to see Matip back. He is such a calm wall together with Virgil. And I need to bring you in now, James, because you've got Bolt with you and we all need to see a beautiful cat. Tell us what you found. How did you find Matip playing?
Yeah, I think, that double act between Matip and Van Dijk has looked very strong so far. I think it was interesting because I think Klopp had a big decision to make before a ball was kicked this season with having paid a fair amount of money to bring Ibrahima Konate in and of course Joe Gomez back fit as well. So he's gone from one extreme to the other in terms of centre back options. I really like Joel Matip. I think he's very underrated, I think, outside of Liverpool, Matip, because he's a very quiet guy. He's not a big personality in the dressing room. He doesn't say much, but he just quietly goes about his business, doesn't he? And I think, when he can stay fit, then how good he is as an elite centre-back is there for all to see. And in the same with Van Dijk, I thought that was another important step forward for him because, yes, he got through 90 minutes against Norwich, but, it was only Norwich. You know, playing Burnley is different because the physical battle is that much greater when, you've got Barnes and Chris Wood, battering into you at every single turn and having to win all those aerial duels. And that was a big thing for me, the fact that Liverpool just didn't allow themselves to get bullied by Burnley, which is what Burnley try and do to you, and which is what Burnley did successfully at Anfield back in January. And that's, when you look ahead towards next weekend with the Chelsea game, key battles wise, especially when you see Lukaku absolutely tormenting that Arsenal back line last weekend. That is going to be an absolutely fascinating battle. Van Dijk and Matip, who goes in for those physical duels with Lukaku, and who comes out on top. I think in that one will go a long way to determining the outcome.
Yeah, what do they need to do, David, to stop Lukaku on absolute fire these days?
Well, he did bully Murray for Arsenal at the weekend, and it has been highlighted that Murray didn't do himself any favours. He allowed Lukaku to take over. Certainly with Van Dijk in Liverpool's back line, he's not going to be the type of player who's going to be bullied by Lukaku. Now, whether or not Matip allows him to be is it's going to be a bit of a test for Matip, but it's you stop the ball at source. So if Lukaku doesn't get the ball, he can do very little danger, really. So you don't concentrate on Lukaku. It's the players in front of that are firing the ammunition that are going to be, that's where Liverpool are going to have to be on their game, closing down Chelsea in midfield and not allowing those balls in. And then if the balls are attempted in, whether there's some sort of guard in front of the two centre backs, whether that will be Fabinho back in situ, I suspect, I'd like to think it will be. I think Fabinho is, for me, he's the more better defensive type of central midfield player than Henderson, but I would have Henderson in there as a sort of in the right side, and his energy will be key to be closing down the likes of Kovacic and Jorginho. I think Liverpool will have to work on sort of match in Chelsea in the midfield areas, rather getting obsessed with Lukaku, who obviously he's there to sort of to fire the bullet at the end of the day, but he rests on supply, so we cut down on the supply. It's not sort of rocket science.
You mentioned Fabinho here, and as James mentioned just earlier, he has just lost his dad sadly, and we're sending all the love to him and his family. But you, David, you've experienced the same, and same did Alisson last season. How early can you mentally be ready to play after losing your dad so suddenly? Because you experienced exactly the same when you were a young player at Liverpool. How long does it take? I lost my dad too early too, and I don't think I would have been mentally ready to do my job. I think I was live on Norwegian radio a few days later, and I can't remember anything of a two-hour live broadcast at the main channel. I certainly wasn't mentally ready to go back to work. But as a football player, is it easy to sort of shut your head off and do what you need to do? I know it's individual, but still.
Yeah, I think times have changed. And then sometimes, I don't know, in years gone by, you weren't perhaps given the as much sort of sentiment and grace of the people around you. It was a case of, it was very much in the old days. You just got to show your mettle and get back at the coal face, so to speak. These days we're a different society, and now we there's a lot more sort of concern and sentiment geared towards people in bereavement. But I think, and it's not easy to say, but I sense that, the person who leaves us doesn't want have people sitting and moping around forever, thinking of the past. They want to move on and do you go on and show your strength and be the man, be the person that sort of they would want you to be. And in that, the best way to honor sort of Fabinho's dad would be, to get up there, I think, and do it for him as much as anything else. I think that's what Alisson did. I think, okay, have a few days off from one thing or another, but you can't sort of, I'm not the type to think that you can dwell on these things. You've got to, a distraction sometimes in a lot of ways for me is a good thing to get on. It takes your mind away from other things. And I think personally, I would think Fabinho would be ready to play next weekend. And I think he could have probably fewer better games to actually come back to.
Because it's going to be so full on, you have to just keep your head right with the game the whole time. If we look into predictions, David, you want to go first? What do you predict the game will turn out to be?
Well, it'll be a tough game, and we made our predictions last week, and we were all very cocksure about how easy it would be for, not how so much easy it would be for Liverpool, but how comfortable it would be. I think at this time of the season, the strength of Chelsea being what it is, I think any one goal deficit would be acceptable. And I think even if we win by the odd goal, I think we'd be happy. So I suspect Chelsea will cause us problems, and not wishing to be always sort of hung out there to dry on wrong predictions, but I think Liverpool will win by the odd goal. Whether that's 2-1 or 1-0, I'd be happy.
2-1 or 1-0, yeah. What about Bolt and James? What are you guys predicting? You need to hold up Bolt because we need to see him properly. He's such a gorgeous think, for those who watch this on Facebook or YouTube.
I think she wants feeding. Yeah, I think that's why she just keeps on annoying me. The good news is Fabinho was back training at Kirby today. So I think we probably will see him back in the midfield. And as David said, he's such a key part, I think, of the unit that Klopp has built. And I think he, as well as that midfield has done in the first two games, I still think you have to make room for Fabinho. And I'm sure Henderson will start. And then probably between Keita and Thiago for that final place in midfield. So, as good as Chelsea have looked, and they have got extraordinary depth, I still fancy Liverpool. I think the fact is a 5:30 kickoff I think plays into Liverpool's hands as well, because, you know, as good as the atmosphere was last Saturday, I think you can probably times it by two or three for what it'll be like at half five this Saturday. And I think there's always an extra edge as well when Liverpool play Chelsea. Now, there's no love lost between the two sets of fans. I fancy Liverpool probably 2-1.
We haven't seen you for a while, James, in the podcast. What is life like writing for The Athletic? Are you still having as much fun as you had in the beginning?
Yeah, I am, thanks. Yeah, it's been good. It's been obviously a difficult time for everyone, hasn't it, with the pandemic, and obviously that does have an impact in terms of being able to go places and see people and do interviews, and it's not quite the same trying to maintain relationships and contacts and do interviews over Zoom or on the phone compared to actually going and spending time with people. So thankfully it feels like we're kind of like beyond the worst of that now. There's a bit of normality returning, and I like the fact that I get to do a wide range of things, from, you know, former players interviews to current players, obviously all the matches as well. And then, you know, last week, I spent some time putting together a big piece on Ray Kennedy, who I think he recently celebrated his 70th birthday, and was very grateful to his son Dale to have a long chat with me and Jimmy Case as well, talking about as Dale's described it, it's almost like poor Ray has had two different lives, really, in terms of the amazing glory he enjoyed as a player with Arsenal and Liverpool, and then he was 35 years of age when he was diagnosed with Parkinson's, and the second half of his life spent fighting this kind of cruel and debilitating illness. That was one piece that got published at the weekend, and then probably the other end of the spectrum, you're analysing that win over Burnley and looking ahead towards Chelsea.
It sounds like you're living the dream life for so many Liverpool supporters. What about you, Karen? Predictions for Chelsea?
Well, obviously, it's going to be an interesting clash, isn't it, on Saturday. I'm going for like a sort of a bit more humble, like a 1-0 or something, that of course we are going to win, but something not by too many goals, I would say. That's my prediction. I mean, I'll be working as well, so I will only hear the shouts of the supporters when they score, but I'll be looking forward to hearing that sound.
Well, that's the beauty of Hotel Tia. It's only 200 metres from the ground, yeah. So it's almost like you are inside Anfield on those big electric nights. And now
we could hear the sound of people shouting, you know, when we scored the goal and cheering, and then it was like delayed reaction because on the television, obviously, there's a delay, and then that would come a little bit later. So it was like it was fun. It was fun to hear. Heard it in in stereo. We heard it once from the ground, and then again when people were cheering when they saw it on the television. So
it's pretty cool. You don't get that in Greece, I'll tell you what.
No, you definitely don't get any. I mean, Greek football leaves a lot to be desired, I would say, generally.
And you're going to interview Mr. Fairclough 4 hours before kickoff for those who are signing up for our pre-match event lunch, two-course lunch, which will be amazing. I just saw pictures of the food from last week. It looked incredible. Will you make David talk about Saint-Étienne? Talking about roars from Anfield. Will he have to talk about Saint-Étienne?
Well, it would be an oversight if we didn't talk about it, obviously, wouldn't we? It would be, we have to talk about that. But we're, you know, talk about anything else David wants to talk about at all. It's, you know, everybody will be really interested to hear anything that he's got to say about his favourite, you know, his time at Liverpool and anything at all. I mean, it's great to hear former players, you know, who lived through the glory years. It's great to hear about their experiences. Everybody, I mean, it's just great to be part of that, you know, being able to talk to people who've experienced it. And then you see younger people, they get interested in the history of the club and the players. And I think it's great. I think it's great that people can be involved and then speak firsthand to somebody who's lived through all of that and been a great part of building the team up to what it is today. I mean, I think it's a fantastic opportunity for everyone.
And I can't wait to hear what sort of secret you will sneak out of David that we've never heard about before. Something new that he's never talked about before. I can't wait for that challenge.
That's a challenge.
To be served.
That's a challenge.
Something that you've never heard before.
For those who want to join us. Sorry, David. What did you say?
Yeah, there's always something that comes from within about the old days.
David has so many secrets, guys. We're still revealing them one by one, even though he's been on the podcast for years. He still has so many untold stories. So I can't wait to hear what he's got on the plate on Saturday. So if you want to come and listen to David and Karen before the match to warm up to Chelsea, you need to go into ticketsource.co.uk and search Hotel Tia. And David's jump celebrating Saint-Étienne will be the first thing you see on that page, and you know where to click. Dear David and dear James and dear Karen, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on LFC Talk at Hotel Tia this week. I can't wait to catch up with you guys soon again, and hopefully next time it will be with Liverpool still sitting at the very top of the table. Until then, my name is Ragnhild Lund Ansnes, and I hope you will have a lovely week and a great weekend. And thank you for listening to our podcast, and please share it to all your Red family and friends. Take care. Bye-bye.